Good afternoon. It is Friday, April 30th, and it is my pleasure to introduce our guest today. Today is our Ag Board Member Day of when we take a deep dive into one of our favorite board members, Annette Hogan.
Thank you, Chickie. What's a nice opportunity.
Well, great. Annette, why don't you give us a little bit of your background just from the high level that everybody else did their intros, and then we'll start into talking about your career.
Sure. Well, I live, or I try to live, in Coconut Grove, Florida, which is a beautiful community. And I have a partner, I have three dogs, and I have a cat. And I rent my children in the form of nephews. So it makes for a very nice lifestyle, and I enjoy my choices in my career. So I've been able to be on many sides of the equation, if you will, on the supplier side, on the distribution side, and even then on the technology side of both of those sides. So that gets it to you in a nutshell.
I wanted to actually dive into that a bit deeper. And you actually started your career with Eastern Airlines, is that right?
That's right. 1978, March 13th. Memorable day.
Wow. Wow. That's actually a very similar time frame from when I got in the industry. So you were on the operations side of the airline or reservations? What area?
I started off in reservations. My mom had, I come from an airline family, and my mom quickly told me that once school was finished and I was over the age of 21, that I would have to start paying for my tickets. So this was unfathomable for me. It was absolutely unacceptable. So I literally started just to apply to the airlines for anything that they would give me to continue my habit, if you will. And Eastern Airlines was in a very big hiring mode at that time. And I got a job with reservations, which I thought was perfect because it was shift work. I still think it was probably the most highly paid job, including today, if you look at all the hours. And we basically were looking at an airline that at that point in time was very progressive in terms of training, in terms of making sure that airport operations and reservations worked very closely together. So I worked on a lot of functions there. But Eastern was a great airline, and that's where it all started for me.
And something that some people may not know about you is about your place of birth.
My place of birth is Havana, Cuba, and I left at 8 months of age. So I'm not going to tell you exactly when that was, but it was at the time that Castro was just about taking a power in some way, so my family moved over here. It was still at a time where you could go back and forth, and my grandmother would take me back and forth to spend the summers with her other daughter, my aunt, in Havana. And so I have memories. I did that till I was about 4 years old, so spending the summers was very memorable for me. And then, of course, I went back at one point in my life in the year 2003. Back then, I don't know if these laws still exist, but you were able to go back if you had some sort of cultural attachment or if you could prove that you were born there, and I had both. So I chartered a plane, and my mom went with me, and we really had a great time. It's probably, we're all very well-traveled people on this call, so I feel comfortable saying this. Havana is just an unbelievable city. It's got slices of Madrid, of Paris, of Rome, and then you put it in this beautiful, beautiful, lush, tropical environment. It's really quite special, but I haven't been back since.
Wow. So after your job on the airline side of Eastern Airlines, you were part of the group that was originally known as System One.
Yes. There was a small group that we started System One, back in the dungeon of an old Pan Am building, one phone to about seven reps, and it was actually very memorable to build up System One in that way. And I remember many friends of mine telling me, but gee, I mean, isn't that kind of risky, that System 1 stuff and computers with agencies? And from there it took off.
Interesting. And where to after that?
Where to after that? After System 1, at that time there was also a period of about 5 years that Amadeus was building Amadeus. Amadeus was a project for 5 years, and then it became a product. So it was kind of interesting to work at System 1 because you also had a toe, if you will, in on the Amadeus side. However, a former colleague of mine went to American Airlines, and he recruited me in what was back then American Airlines Decision Technologies. And at that point, it was the Crandall days, and he wanted to make sure that we sold software and systems and processes and on a consulting basis to other airlines to make sure that they were up to speed, because Crandall's philosophy was, if I deal with dumb competitors, they're going to drive us all down. So that was a lot of fun, and that was in Dallas. And then Amadeus became a product, and a friend of mine put me in contact with somebody who was hiring at Amadeus in Madrid. I flew over, and the decision was Dallas, Madrid. Let me see. So it was an absolutely beautiful, beautiful job. Again, having known some of the players already because of the Miami efforts where they were developing Amadeus close to System 1 and the old Eastern system. And then from there, I went on to another friend of mine put me in contact with a very interesting gentleman, Peter Wallenberg. And Peter Wallenberg is the family. The Wallenbergs are the owners of former companies, in this case of Saab, Electrolux, Ericsson Communications. And Peter back then in the early 90s was doing what many families of wealth were doing. They were playing with internet companies and seeing which ones kind of panned out. So through a good colleague of mine, I met Peter, and it was instantly, you know, my gosh, what a wonderful opportunity, although it was a small company. They say the Wallenberg family back then was estimated at $60 billion net worth. So I thought, well, I think there's enough funding here. And we did very well. We actually positioned the company, and it later became the backbone of One Travel. I don't know if you know that, Chickie.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And from there, I moved back. I was living in Amsterdam for 3.5 something years, and my mom had had her first stroke. So being an only child, I came back to Miami, and Peter was absolutely so supportive. I would go back and forth Amsterdam, Miami for about 6 months to make sure that whole effort was still in place, but yet I could take care of what I needed to take care of. And I had was lucky enough to be recruited by Royal Caribbean during that time, so I went home with a job, which is always nice.
Well, and the interesting thing was that the job was e-commerce.
Yeah.
Way, way before e-commerce was really and truly fashionable, because this had to be 1997?
96. Yeah. And actually, just to date myself further, it was marketing automation. The old term for e-commerce. But yes. And, you know, it's interesting because, you know, we were talking about budget the other day when you were up here, and I think that's where I got my keen sense of defending budgets, because back then, and even moving forward during that time of the mid to even early 2000, you really had to defend your e-commerce budget, because not everybody was a believer. There were still folks out there that were questioning where that stuff was really going to go.
Oh, clearly. And actually, it's so funny because even though we should have met before then, it was actually your next job where we met. And I was brought in by the folks at Ernst & Young to work on a big sales pitch for an e-commerce platform for a company called Far and Wide. And the interesting thing was, just to show how little people understood about e-commerce at that time, and I believe that was 98.
Yeah.
And in 1998, Ernst & Young, you know, we had like 25, you know, hotshot MBAs in a hotel ballroom, you know, working on this proposal all night to deliver to Far and Wide the next day. And you know, little did I know we were going to be presenting to Annette. But the interesting thing was that these guys, they had just gotten finished building a site for, I believe it was J. Crew. And they're like, well, we could just use that. Like, how different is travel, like, from shirts? It's, like, blue, and it's small, medium, and large, and you can get it in white and long sleeve and short sleeve. It's like, no, I don't think you understand. Although, you know, if they had done that, Annette, maybe we would have ended up with true, you know, cross-product shopping carts way earlier than, you know, I mean, we're still struggling with that now. So jump in with really, well, I guess you did have a little bit of startup feel with some of those other ventures, but this was like the startup of all startups.
Absolutely. With one heck of a checkbook, though. That was, I don't know if some of you guys remember Phil Bakes. He was at one time the president of Eastern Airlines, and he's the fellow that brought Continental out of bankruptcy, and he just had a lot of background, a charming fellow. So when presenting for funding and all of that, literally just his charm really penetrated through as well, very, very sharp. And Phil's, I was employee number 4 on Far and Wide. So he really recruited an excellent team. We went out and we bought 20 companies. The payouts designed with the companies were very clever. It really kept the management on and happy, and we were basically responsible for integrating all of this from a B2B and then eventually a B2C side. We didn't make it after 9/11. So it lasted a little bit after that, and then basically by default, I then got into consulting.
Right.
And that lasted like 3 or 4 years, and then Delaware North called, and Delaware North is based in Buffalo, New York, and its alternative is then Fresno. So when they said that, I said, "Well, gee, I don't know about the." Meanwhile, I was in Miami. I don't know about those locations, but why don't I go up for the interview anyway? Thinking that in my consulting practice, I could, you know, basically convince them that they didn't need to hire anybody; they could do it out of consulting resources. But it was quite compelling because I had never really done national parks and these types of resorts and looked at that portfolio in that way, and it became very, very attractive. So I then
well, and pure hospitality. You know, that was really your first venture into that. And I think the other really interesting thing, you know, that I've learned from working closely with you is when you have to start thinking, and you know, your first role with Delaware North was really at the corporate level, overseeing a lot of property folks, but really learning the property side and what the property deals with. And you know, again, I was fortunate to work with you on that project of helping to figure out how you can apply kind of the same marketing templates to your properties, as well as to things like Old Town San Diego, which you guys at that time managed.
Yeah.
So then you decided you wanted to be back in Miami again. Your mom was getting a little bit older and needing a little bit more care, so you came back home again.
I came back home again, but, you know, it's wonderful to work in different companies because you make new friends. And I did come back to Miami with Carolyn. I came back to Miami with Amadeus and did a project with vacation.com, so we kind of wrapped that up, and we had the pleasure of working with Solutions. And then after this was kind of done and solved, it was, well, what's next? I asked my boss, and she says, well, you know, there's this hospitality division that we've got. So did about a couple of years or a few years there on that side, and I made a strategic decision, which was a little spooky for me, but I thought I had some counsel from a couple of very smart people that I really was missing the destination side of things. So I thought, well, let me try to get back to that. couple of folks even told me, you're getting a little bit too much technology behind you, and you're going to pigeonhole yourself into technology, and now you're back at a technology company. So I took the plunge. I left Amadeus. I had no idea the economy would tank as severely as it did, but it did. But, you know, it was an interesting move. Fortunately for me, I also have another business with a partner, which is a boutique gym with Pilates and things of that nature. So that has, you know, worked out very well. But then as one would have it with relationships, there came an opportunity with Kennedy. And I always leave transition plans when I transition. And the person that I fought very much and it was totally the right decision to put in my place at Delaware North, was still with Delaware North, heading up the sales and marketing for the division. So she called me up one day, and she said, look, there's some issues that we've got with Kennedy, and the biggest issue is that our 15-year contract with NASA is up, and we can't lose this. So I was recruited to make some changes at sales and marketing, kind of make it buzz right along, which we've been doing, and it's really worked out very, very well. Companies, the property's doing very well. We're ahead, while our partners over in SeaWorld and Disney World are having deep dives. I think Disney World was the only one to wind up flat last year, and we were actually up, certainly by no comparison of size. Are we ever the size of Disney? But interesting, and we're tracking even ahead right now in first quarter. But nonetheless, it was interesting to for me to work at a property level, and it's given me, as I think you've mentioned earlier, the side of the corporate side when you're pushing stuff down and you're saying, you know, you will do this property. Now I see where some of the barriers, some of the concerns, and perhaps how much more smoothly things could happen when corporate and properties work together. So it's really been a blessing. It's been a growth part of for me in my career, working at the property level.
One of the really interesting perspectives, and this reminds me a little bit of the kind of what I call the glory days of the GDS, the early years, you know, back in the early 80s when everybody still liked each other. You know, suppliers and GDSs and travel agencies all were very much in partnership with one another, and you know, the kind of antagonism that is built up over the years, you know, wasn't there. And there were a lot of us who were young, but, you know, those of us who have grown up in that industry, you know, the industry is now dominated by a lot of 40- and 50-year-olds who have all the corporate knowledge and the industry knowledge. And you're at a place where you've got a very young team, and I have thoroughly enjoyed working with them, by the way. But you are with a team of pretty much 20 and 30-somethings, right?
27 of them. Yes. And I got to tell you, I love it.
So tell me about the dynamics of that, how it's made you think, how you have to communicate differently with having a younger workforce.
Well, it reminds me of things that my grandmother used to say. She used to always say, stay with the young people. Never go to a doctor that's too old, you know, because, yeah. So I've had so many thoughts of sayings like that of my grandmother, and to me this has been very refreshing. Number one, I think we're all workaholics on this call. I think we all have a lot of zippity-doo-dah left in our day and our high energy and all of this. But in general, those I think are exceptional people and exceptions. What you have with this team is a total can-do attitude. Consistently, the way they look at social media, it's not a new medium. It's life. So as a marketer, and when you're positioning and you're looking at strategies and how to get stuff out there, it's a nice balance to see folks that are actually just bringing what is regular life out there, and you're not doing any kind of, well, here's the proving ground, and you know, this is why we have to do social media and et cetera. So very refreshing. a very talented group of people, very responsible. So I'm having a ball.
Well, that's great. And Annette, I know one of your many responsibilities is public relations. And, you know, of course, everyone is aware that Obama has recently made some pretty significant cuts in the federal budget, which more than trickle down to NASA. So, you know, how have you handled the challenge of, first of all, the complete misconception that, you know, somehow Kennedy Space Center is, you know, completely closing down at the end of this year and you won't have a job, you know, all the way through to, you know, all of the other iterations of what people are thinking about this?
You know, the other day one of the magazines came over and we did I did an interview for them and they asked the same thing. And I'm so glad you're asking this on this call, because it was just a regular old Tuesday or Wednesday during the week. And they said, what are you going to do when shuttles go away? And I said, well, you know, let's look out the window over here. There's about 12,000 people in there. So really, the space program is one element, and we naturally gain a lot of advantage on launch days. I mean, we sold probably around 12,000, 11,500 tickets the other day in less than 20 minutes. When we opened for sale, both the launch viewing, which is the VIP area, as well as the causeway, which is another area, as well as here in the park. So those definitely give us a bump up. However, the park itself is an immersive feeling, an immersive experience, where you can take children and they will see where life can go, that you can be an astronaut, that you can go to the moon. I think what's happened with the space program is that it has gotten some negative press, and many astronauts perhaps in NASA are not happy with some of the statements. Many are happy with some of the statements. So like anything, everybody's got an opinion. But all in all, we're going to Mars. All in all, there's still interest in space exploration. All in all, there's lots of countries, China, India, others, Russia, that are investing heavy dollars there. So what we have to do as marketers is make sure that, and right now winning the contract, you can imagine there's master planning going on. It's an absolutely precious time to be somewhere, because we are creating the evolution of this brand, both from a product development as well as a branding perspective. So mm-hmm. What we need to capitalize is how much more reach, how many more people can we make sure that know all of this information. And we've got some things from the Obama statements the other day that we can hook onto. So going to Mars is not a bad statement.
Right. And I had shared, I think, before you got on the call that last Saturday I took my son and three of his friends to Kennedy Space Center, and it was just so much fun to watch them. And there's a new exhibit that's open. I'm not even sure it's officially open full time, but it actually maps out all the things that are going to have to happen in order to go to Mars. And it's just it's amazing. It's totally fascinating. And I have shared with so many people since I've been doing work for you, Annette, that I didn't realize until I walked through the front gate how much I love space. And I mean, I just fell in love with space and all things space. So it's been a really, really wonderful opportunity for me to work with you and to be able to be over there so much and to have seen some launches and to be a part of that master planning moving forward. So thank you very, very much for that opportunity to work with you on that.
Well, the feeling is mutual, and the yoga helps too.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And the amazing thing is I'm not sore, so that was a really good thing for me to take up.
There you go.
Well, I would like to open it to questions, and you know, would love to hear from kind of each person about any questions that you've got, whether it's about Kennedy Space Center or you know, what it's like to be on the property side, or just anything you want to ask about. Who'd like to be first? Carolyn, you're always good for a question. Are you still on with us?
I am certainly on. Okay, so I'll bring it back to Amadeus, well, maybe Amadeus, but a little bit of all your experience, Annette, in working in Europe and the different cultures and being a woman, and any challenges or any insights that you could give us in terms of how to best navigate that.
Well, actually, being a woman and being an American woman is a very, at least back then, it really worked for a person because you could get away with a little bit more. Usually, and again, I worked for technology companies, so there was never a woman on the at the table. But being an American woman and perhaps the age, perhaps all of these components put together worked where you would be able to go into a room, you would be able to do your presentation, you would be able to be taken very, very seriously during negotiations of large-scale contracts in some cases. So I think it wasn't just being a woman, I think it was being an American woman that worked very well. From the cultural side, you know, what I have appreciated from Europe, and I think that maybe perhaps we here in this country need to take a little bit of more thought for, is Europeans are truly strategic thinkers. In America, we think in a more short-term perspective. Maybe that's good. I don't know. But what I do find is that when you've really taken the time to look at a long-term vision and stick to your guns of what that vision is, how you get there changes, trends change, economies change, things to change in general. But the overall vision and the execution plans I came to really, really appreciate. And I hope I still have a little bit of that in me because you get wound up in the hustle and bustle of every day, and you're just surviving by perusing emails and scanning documents that you should be really thinking about. But I do appreciate that very much from the European side. And then just culturally being immersed in these environments, I remember, because I'm Cuban and my whole family background, I remember walking the streets of Madrid one day and thinking, wow, all these people look like my cousins. You know, I must be home. So it from a personal perspective and at the place and point that I was, you know, age-wise and whatnot, it was just great. And I am so glad that I had those opportunities and acted on them. But I think being an American woman works very well for you. I don't know, Flo, you might have a comment or two on that. You're so exposed to so many cultures, and you've got such a great background.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to agree with you. I think that, you know, the Europeans, I think, approach things very differently than Americans, although I think that there's still some challenges in dealing, I think, with some of the European from being female versus male. So, I don't know, I've experienced it on both sides of the Atlantic, quite frankly.
Yeah.
and I think it's just a matter of being able to go out there and you have to prove yourself whether you're male or female.
Yeah.
And you just have to, be strong and be very persistent and have a good sense of humor. I find that always helps.
Yes, not taking yourself too seriously, definitely. All right, anybody else? Okay, well, I'm going to stop the recording part of this. And, of course, Annette, you're welcome to stay on if you have time. And if you have to go, we understand that, too. And so appreciate you taking the time to talk to us and sharing a little bit about your business background and also the personal side, which is also great to get to know. So just bear with me for a second, and I will turn off the recording.